Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Why are you picking on me? Everyone else was doing it too, grumbled Brent. All the other guys were there. They're always there. First of all, his father replied, as we've discussed before, you're not all the other guys. Second, do you think it's a smart thing to hang around an area like that with bars and pawn shops late at night? There have been fights there. There are drunks hanging around. What exactly were you guys doing? Brent looked in the direction of the floor, hands deep in his pockets. Weren't doing anything, just hanging out, that's all. Well, couldn't you and your friends find a better place to just hang out? His father inquired. I don't know, Brent mumbled. That's just what they do. His dad looked at him carefully. Maybe it's time to find another set of guys to hang out with. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about the influence of peers on our teens, and what should we do to be helpful? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest studies adolescence and violence. Edgardo Menviel is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and faculty member at the George Washington University School of Medicine. His professional interests include adolescent development, development of gender and sexual identity, and parenting. He's the proud uncle of six and godfather of two. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Menviel.
Thank you. Hello, and thank you for having me here.
All parents of teens have heard this refrain, but all my friends are doing it. How prevalent is peer pressure among teens?
Well, I would say 100% prevalent.
Oh, my gosh.
Peer pressure or peer influence is not only prevalent in teens, it's prevalent in all of us, adults and children. Perhaps in teens, it's more critical for several reasons. For example, as children get older, they need to be accepted by their peer group, and that becomes more and more important. Teens are struggling with their identity, so sometimes they are struggling with questions like who I am and what am I going to be in the future. And they're also struggling with the changes in their bodies and their sexual urges. All of these are reasons that make teenagers a little bit more vulnerable for influences that sometimes can take a negative aspect. At the same time, teens also have more opportunities to get into trouble than younger kids, so we have to be particularly vigilant with teenagers.
Dr. Menviel, how significant is peer influence for violent and other kinds of delinquent behavior? Is it also 100%?
Well, it is very significant for all kinds of behaviors, including violent and negative behaviors of all kinds. But peer influences is not always a teen telling other teen, do this or do that. There's some of that, of course. But also, the group dynamics are very important. In a group of people, there are individuals that become more dominant, the leaders, and there are individuals that are the followers. And children often want to become leaders or dominate the group. And that may motivate their behavior. For example, they might want to be cooler than the others and do things because of that.
So it sends them maybe to more extreme behavior than they would ordinarily be prone to do?
Correct. Yeah, for example, kids may dare each other to do certain things, and those things may turn out into a violent or illegal activity. Mm-hmm. And they do that because the person that is daring the other is in a way dominating the other. And the kid that accepts the dare may do so wishing to be accepted by the group, or go up in the hierarchy of dominance within that group.
That sounds like the elk batting their heads against each other is a much better way of doing it, to be dominant than this.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. In fact, it's not just humans that do this. We see this in other animals that are social in nature, and we are social animals ourselves. So, you know, these group dynamics, these social tensions exist not necessarily because of culture. You know, they're very ingrained in what we are as human beings.
Dr. Menviel, we understand that the National Institute of Mental Health has sponsored a treatment program for juvenile delinquents based on therapeutic foster families. We thought that was really an interesting technique. Can you explain how that would help to blunt the influence of delinquent peers?
Yes, this comes from observations, from findings in research that doing things the way that we used to do them, which is to clump together kids that have these kinds of problems, put them together in a group home, for example, in reality doesn't help these children. In fact, it might make them worse.
Sounds like inmates being put together, sort of, and you learn antisocial behavior, you learn all kinds of bad things.
But we've been doing it for years.
Exactly. We have been doing it for years. Because now we are able to look into these more scientifically, we realize that this is perhaps not the best practice. So the alternative is not to put them together with other kids that have these issues, but to put them in environments that can actually help them and also monitor them and control them. So the idea is to use foster parents that are very well trained in dealing with difficult behaviors. Mm. So then a home environment can be provided for the child that works more like a family and where the other peer influences are not present. And also part of the task of the parents is to monitor the peer relationships of these kids, make sure that they do not end up associating with other kids with similar problems, because that really compounds the issue.
I could think of a huge risk in this would be that the kid brought into a new situation could be the influential one on the other kids in the neighborhood.
That's right, yes.
So that's a big challenge.
It is, right.
So these kids are mostly put in sort of mainstream kind of school situations, or it varies depending on what they've done?
Right, it varies depending on their needs. But typically they are put into mainstream school situations if they can participate in that kind of program, and sometimes they go to specialized programs.
What are some danger signs that parents can look for about a teen's peer group? We're all getting kind of nervous now as we're talking about some of this going on.
When you talk about violence and delinquency, it does make you a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think parents need to be aware of where is their child socially. You know, what are their relationships? Does this child have stable friendships? How is the child adjusting to the social environment? Is this child a leader? Is it a follower? Is he part of a group? Is he accepted or she accepted? Or is she excluded from the group?
Now, what if your child doesn't bring his or her friends home to your house? How do you follow all this?
Well, parents need to talk to their kids as much as they can, and they need to find a way to talk to them so that the kids actually respond. That's number one. And parents also should use other observers, other parents, the teachers. So it's important, for example, for parents also to try to befriend the parents of the child's friends or acquaintances, so they have other avenues to get a full picture. The parent should not just rely on what the child says, because children often deny problems or they want to look in the best possible light.
So parents need peer groups too.
Parents need peer groups too. That's right.
And sometimes parents are threatened. Some parents who know that their children are causes of problems are the very ones who don't want to come to the meetings or to talk over with other parents what's going on.
That's right. It's harder for those parents, but they need to understand that children are not all bad or all good. All children have a mixture of bad and good. And if their child is causing problems, let's say their child is a bully and it's being identified as such by a number of people, parents need to face that issue. They need to realize that that's going on, and they need to try to find solutions for it and talk to people about it, because sweeping it under the rug and pretending it's not there is not going to be helpful.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens and peer influence.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Edgardo Menviel about adolescence and peer influence. What about parents who have a child who's sort of considered a loner? And then the business about trying to find the parents of the friends is a lot dicier.
Right. Well, when we talk about a loner, we have to make a distinction because there are children who like to be alone and feel comfortable. Their temperament is such that they don't need to have a lot of people around. Sometimes they prefer to play by themselves or to read or quiet activities, and that's fine. You know, if the child is happy and they also have friendships, but maybe they don't need to see their friends all the time, that's fine.
That's important for parents to know, I think.
Right. The loner kid that we worry about, that we really worry about, is the kid that is excluded by the peer group, is the kid that desperately wants to belong to the group, but is not allowed in. And who are those kids? Well, often they're kids that are different from the group in some way. And because of the group dynamics, they are not accepted. You know, these are kids that are teased, that, you know, they're bullied, that they become victims. And therefore, they do not connect with other people and lonely. And you can have kids that are very angry about it or kids that are sort of passive and accepted. Neither one is good. But the very worst we know from research is the kids that are angry about it, the kids that are rejected and act out on their anger.
How would these kinds of kids be more at risk for negative peer influence?
These kids, first of all, tend to have very low self-esteem. They don't develop a healthy self-esteem, and therefore they are more vulnerable. And sometimes because they are so desperately wanting to belong, they might do things that are other kids are telling them to do just to be accepted.
So they have nothing to lose by engaging in behaviors that we would consider risky.
They think they don't, but in the end, of course, they do. But the kid may feel that it's better to do something negative to get the attention or the acceptance of the group rather than be alone or accept their condition. I mean, it's a very sad situation, and we certainly need to help those kids.
Are there any other danger signs that parents should watch for in a teen's peer group?
I think that parents need to get to know their teen's friends in any way they can. You know, set things up so that their child feels free to bring their friends to their home, spend time there. Parents should try to engage their friends in some little conversation, not interrogation, of course, but, you know, in some casual, friendly, accepting conversation so that the friends feel comfortable and show themselves as they are in front of the parents. Parents need to try to befriend the parents of the kids' friends and talk to the teachers as well. I think all those pieces are important, and it's putting all those things together that the parent is going to get a sense of the kinds of kids that the child is hanging out with.
Teens get kind of moody and go off to their rooms alone, shut the door, that kind of thing. Should we be concerned?
I think it's also a matter of degree. You know, we all get moody. We all need sometimes our time by ourselves. I think for teenagers, this is particularly true. You know, they go into their rooms, they want to listen to their music or play on the computer and so forth, and they don't want anybody around. On occasion, that is fine. And the parents should respect that. And that's not the time where the parents should come and ask what's going on. Let's talk now. Right. That's not the time. You know, parents need to pick the time wisely. And that's when the kid is feeling good. But if you see a lot of that, or that is the predominant situation at home, then you should start, you know, worrying about it.
And go for help.
I mean, you can't just
burst in the door.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What could parents do to help lessen this peer pressure that kids all seem to feel?
I think rather than lessen, we should think about parents steering in it in the right direction. The peer influence is part of being a social, you know, being, and so it's necessary. You know, it's not a bad thing, and it could be a very positive thing, in fact. I mean, parents know that. Parents sometimes encourage, you know, a kid when they see a friend that they like or a kid that they would like to become a friend of their child, of their daughter or son, they might encourage her or him to befriend that child, to become friends and so forth. So they know that peer influence can be very positive. So parents need to be attentive to the negative warning signs, but not necessarily interfere, because the parents cannot make friends for the child. That's something that the child has to make. The parents can show how they make friends. They can be a good model for their kids, and that's a very important piece. And they can also create situations where kids are more likely to meet and facilitate that.
I've noticed that young people who are included when their parents have friends over for informal gatherings seem more poised and more comfortable around adults. It seems like that's a good idea. If your child is willing to hang around for part of the time, it's a good experience for them to see how adults get along.
I agree with that observation. I think that kids that are raised in environments where the parents are socializing with a variety of people of different ages, of different cultures, tend to become much more adept in social situations. Mm. So it is very important. It's not always possible for families to socialize with a variety of people. But I think, you know, it is important to remember that, like for anything else, that the children learn more from what they see than from what they're told.
You could say that again.
Always the way. And
again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It occurs to me that people who are lucky enough to have a good-sized extended family might have this adult relationship modeling built in then that the kids could see.
That's right, yes.
Makes a good argument for getting families together on a regular basis.
Absolutely, right. And if it is not your own family, other families, neighbors, and so forth, it's very important. The other point is that, like with most things with adolescents, we should start thinking about these issues before the kids are adolescents. Mm. Because once the kids are adolescents, it's often harder to reach or change certain things. So parents should be thinking about how their kids are socializing earlier than adolescents. And that's another warning sign. If a kid is 8 or 9 and they haven't been able to form a friendship, and friendships don't need to last forever, of course, but you know, that more or less at any given time, they have at least a friend or two. And there is that mutual connection, liking each other and supporting each other. If that's not happening, then parents should start getting concerned before the kid becomes a teen.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens and peer influence.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Edgardo Menviel about adolescence and peer influence. I think you see young people, Sandy and I call them tweens when we write about them. They're not toddlers, they're not tykes, but they're not quite teenagers yet. You see them leaving kids out in some kinds of groups. One kid is the one that they'll all pick on. Girls especially do
right.
This. Boys tend to have smaller groups of friends. But they're loyal to each other, unless there's one, as you said before, who might be a little different.
Right.
They might also treat as an outcast.
Right.
And that happens much younger than teenage years.
That definitely happens.
Yeah.
In fact, it starts happening in kindergarten.
Mm. It seems like this is, in a way, making the case for out-of-school activity groups of some kind, like scouting groups or clubs or things like that, so that kids will have more opportunities to try out the idea of making friends or getting along with other people.
I think so, but we should be careful not to overstructure social situations. And sometimes we tend to do that. I think kids today may have a lot of social opportunities, but they're all structured by the adults. You know, it's soccer or it's this or it's that. And they don't have as many opportunities. And those things are important, don't get me wrong, but they don't have as many opportunities for social experiences that are more unstructured, where they really have to be more creative and how they relate and learn more about a variety of interactions among people. And I think the example of families and different generations and different kinds of people providing a very rich experience for socialization is is clearly very important.
I think it starts even when they're little and you take them to the park and they start to play with other people's children.
Right.
And you might start talking with the other adults, but your child is learning to make a new friend.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's sort of a shame because the way we grew up many eons ago.
Yeah, you could just go out and play.
You would just go out in your backyard.
Yeah, right.
And that really has disappeared pretty much.
The child is learning to make a new friend by trial and error, and the child is also watching you make a new friend. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we need to be aware of is that parents should not necessarily interfere on the kids' friendships, you know, because kids along the way are going to have best friends, they're going to fight and break up, then they're going to have to become friends again. And, you know, there's a lot of conflicts and situations, sometimes teasing when it's not completely pervasive. Parents don't necessarily need to interfere with that because it's the kid that needs to find the solutions to those dilemmas. So parents need to be supportive, you know, be able to listen to the child, give them feedback, but not necessarily take sides. You know, sometimes parents are inclined to defend their own child and criticize the other child, for example. That's not necessarily a good idea, unless it's something really clearly unfair. You know, their child is being clearly victimized by somebody else and so forth. But the minor conflicts, the minor bumps along the road, kids need to resolve themselves.
So then they sort of feel like they've made it through and they've accomplished something in the process.
Yes, and they learn their skills.
Earlier you mentioned something about children who are bullies or who are bullied. Could you talk a little more about that, since we know lots of listening parents have had to deal with that?
Sure, it's a very important issue. Generally speaking, when we think about bullies and bullied children, we tend to think that there is one bully that does all the bullying, and there is maybe one kid that is always the victim. But in reality, what research shows is that bullying tends to be much more generalized, that yes, there are certain kids that are bullies most of the time, and there are certain kids that are victims most of the time. But that's not the most common form of bullying. Bullying occurs in a variety of ways, and often I would say that most kids at some point or another get bullied. But if a child is picked on a regular basis, that child needs, of course, to be paid attention to. And if there is the same thing for the bully, if there is a child that is bullying on a regular basis, that kid needs help as well. One thing that we forget is that kids don't necessarily report being bullied. Mm-hmm. Some research has shown that it's about 50% that kids report to an adult, that is the parent or a teacher, the bullying. So a lot of it goes unnoticed by adults.
Is it because of embarrassment?
It's because of embarrassment, and it's because kids feel that adults are not going to be able to correct the situation. So there's a certain level of hopelessness in kids that are bullied.
How can adults reverse that? Or before it happens, let the kids know that here's someone you can come to and here's the way you can do it?
Right. Well, I think one way is for parents to talk to the kids about that, because I think that as parents, sometimes we do not want to rock the boat, or we don't want to ask questions that are embarrassing, or we don't want to contribute to that feeling. But parents need to communicate to the kids that that's okay, that happens to everybody, and they want to know if it happens to them. And sometimes they can't do anything about it, but sometimes they can. It depends, and so forth. So the parent being able to communicate to the child that they understand that these things happen is very important.
It sounds like sooner rather than later.
Sooner rather than later.
How old would you have that kind of conversation with your kid?
As soon as the child starts school. Because that's where it happens.
Dr. Menviel, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more than we've been able to share in this short time about teens and how they influence each other?
Well, I think, you know, of course you can go to your local library or bookstore and find a lot of resources. I have here some books that I have picked up that I found very useful. This one is by Michael Thompson, and it's called Best Friends, Worst Enemies: Understanding the Social Lives of Children. And this is a book that really deals with all aspects of the social life of children. I think it's very good. I have here another book called Your Child, Bully, or Victim: This one is by Peter Sheras.
Can you spell that last
name? Yeah. Sheras is S-H-E-R-A-S. There are many books on parenting that your listeners may be familiar with. I have one here that is The Complete Idiot's Guide, Parenting a Teenager.
Doesn't that sound like we all feel?
We need that so fast.
And gives very sort of specific pointers and recommendations. The part that I found very useful is how to talk to teenagers. Talking to teenagers can be so challenging. And I think here there are very specific techniques to approach teenagers that I think are very good.
Do it with the car keys in your hand.
Yes.
What about websites? Any thoughts on where to go on the web?
Certainly for children that are having problems, you can look at the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry website.
Okay, which would be?
Which is www.aacap.org. And there you will find a section called Facts for Families. And you can download them or you can order them. And they have these fact sheets on a variety of topics, including violence, of course. And those can be useful.
If you have a child that really needs some help in a specific situation, the first thing you do is talk to the pediatrician for reference.
Right. The first thing that you do is you talk to the pediatrician for reference. Sometimes you can talk to a school counselor or a school psychologist.
Especially in high school, I would think.
Right. And you can get references that way, too.
We have been so fortunate to have been able to discuss teens and their peer influences today with Dr. Edgardo Menviel. And thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 177. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. I'll repeat that, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.